Welcome back to Exploring Boys Education, a regular podcast produced by IBSC for leaders and educators in boys' schools around the world. Today we delve into the fascinating realm of artificial intelligence and its potential impact on education. Joining me for this conversation is Brett Salarkis, author and expert in the field of AI and tech integration in education. Before we explore Brett's insights on the purpose of schools, the unique skills teachers bring to the classroom, and how AI can both support and potentially transform education, let's get a quick update from IBSC Executive Director Tom Batty in the IBSC newsreel.
Thank you, Bruce, and hello all listeners, those regular and, of course, those new. In a moment, Bruce and his guest, Brett Salarkis, will be speaking about how AI can support and potentially transform education. They'll explore how AI can be used to create more personalized learning experiences, delve into its potential pitfalls, and discuss the delicate balance between leveraging the benefits of technology and nurturing empathy and humanity. The importance of such balance was borne out at the wonderful recent IBSC annual conference at Harrow School in London. The Ours is a deeply humane and relational craft, emanated from every scribbled note, insightful question, spontaneous love, and joyful meeting of like and unlike minds on the hill. It was a powerful call that amidst the benefits of technology, it is we who bring the meaning to education. Sincere thanks go to all at Harrow who made such gathering possible, particularly Headmaster Alistair Land and Director of Studies Charles Bailey, who led the magnificent Harrow team. On a more personal level, the power of place in our human desire to share story broke out when I first chatted to this episode's guest speaker, as Brett and I realised that in the 90s, I had lived right by his current home in Abbotsford, Sydney. And the local precincts, cafes and takeaways were familiar ground to both of us. Hard themes for technology to conjure and elaborate. Closer to home, the IBSC team is in the process of finalising an exciting suite of professional development offerings for the 24-25 year. Details of these programmes, all designed to support your work with boys, will be released soon. Keep an eye on the IBSC website and email blast for more information. Brett, welcome. Thank you for sharing your insight and expertise and highlighting how, amidst the advent of AI, the strength of boys' schools lies in their ability to grow and sustain positive learning relationships with those in their care. Back to you, Bruce.
I'm hoping that we'll be able to have a succession of conversations with Brett about how AI might impact boys' schools. And so we're going to start today just talking about why AI and how that connects a little bit to the purpose of school and education. But before we get into some of those pieces, Brett, I want to welcome you to the podcast and just say that I'm grateful that you're willing to share your wisdom with us and partner with IBSC. Welcome.
Hey, brother. Always good to be here. Always good to be here. Absolutely nothing I love more than talking tech, talking learning. I am the biggest nerd you're probably going to meet when it comes to ed tech sort of love. And today I'm going to talk about something really, really specific and something like really, I'm going to say confronting. The Chinese character for crisis and opportunity are the same. It's the same word. It's the same character. So I don't know if this all this AI revolution, like as much as it's confronting, it's hugely opportunistic for us to maybe make the changes to education that are going to help all of our schools really, really help shape society moving forward. So there's risk, but there's certainly opportunity for huge positivity as well.
Well, excited to dive into that in a bit. But, you know, who is Brett Salarkis? Maybe we could start there. And I know, you know, we can hear from your accent that you're from down under. But, who are you and what do you keep busy with every day?
Well, look, even before I do that, I'm clearly coming from Australia. You used a word there, welcome. And I want to just pick up on that because in Australia, often when we gather, we will traditionally have what we call either a welcome to country or an acknowledgement of country. And this is important because it's important to understand where we come from. It's important to understand who we are. And coming from Australia, one of our traditions is to acknowledge our First Nations brothers and sisters. And I do that today. I'm not too far from the Parramatta River, from the Barramundigal people, who were the traditional sort of, custodians of the land where I am. The Barramundigal meaning the place of the eel. And our local rugby team here has a big an eel as their mascot, which is like fantastic as well. But Barramundigal, and we call it Parramatta now in modern sort of terms. But I guess it's nice to be able to have that common thread from thousands of generations ago. Our First Nations brothers and sisters were the first teachers, passing down knowledge from generation to generation. And as educators, we continue that tradition. But then specifically, you talk about who I am. Brett Salakis. I'm a Sydney boy, Sydney born and bred, although I've as I hinted before, travelled and taught in a few different countries around the world. Very passionate about education technology. I'm currently HP, Hewlett-Packard, HP, education ambassador for Australia and New Zealand, and work very, very closely with Intel. But look, whilst I've got the absolute best job in the world, because whilst I work for a technology company, I have absolutely, I'm given the longest leash you could imagine. Because my job is purely to advocate for good digital teaching and learning, to help schools, to help systems. When I see great things, to really amplify that, and where possible, to actually help people do really well and improve the quality of teaching and learning that is happening. And I guess I get to do that at scale now as my job, which is like really, really fantastic. Historically, I started about 12 years ago a group called AussieEd, which grew to be the largest online network of teachers in Australia. I've written a lovely book, a mammoth lesson, Teaching in the Digital Age, that was a bestseller in a couple of different countries, and a new book on its way as well. But I guess when you're really passionate about something and you like to help a lot of people like I do, it resonates, and people hear your story.
Thanks for giving us some insights, and I'm sure as we get into this conversation, people will realize why, you know, you have those kind of accolades, but also I think we'll hear your passion. I think let's dive into this conversation, but, you know, thinking of putting together a podcast about AI, you know, it's sometimes difficult to know where to start, and in our conversation before recording, you know, we felt it was important to start with the basics. So I'd love to hear from you what, in your view, the fundamental purpose of schools is in society. And we're going to start there because we're going to get to the AI stuff, but I think it's good to start on that foundation. You know, in our previous conversation, you spoke about how much governments invest, how many resources they invest into education, governments around the world. And so, you know, why would they do that? What's that fundamental purpose?
Yeah, what's that? That's that purpose at all? Like, look, the reality here is, if we take a step back, like you say, when we think of the why, like that's a very Simon Sinek. Let's have a Simon Sinek moment, right? Like, let's do the golden circle. At the core of our circle, what's our why? If we're going to talk AI and all that sort of stuff, but why? Let's get right to the why. Well, why school? Why do we even do it? Like, what's the purpose? So if I ask that to teachers or educators, I reckon you get like 1,000 different answers. Like, you know, we're going to uplift society. We're going to make a difference. We're going to, you know, bring warmth to a child who might not have warmth at home, and give compassion and empathy and someplace safety and security to, you know, we never know the homes that we're actually sending out our children to when we say goodbye to them at the ending of the school day. Who pays the bill? Who pays the bill? It's government. Like whether you are in private education or public education, whatever format of education, government has some sort of financial I guess, costs associated with it. But why is a politician paying that amount of money? And the answer is it's an investment, because the more highly our population is educated, a highly educated population can be employed in high paying jobs. A lowly educated population enters a low-paid workforce. From a government perspective, they want the population to be as highly paid as possible, because we need excess money in the economy so that people can pay, and we have that nice circular economy and money can go around and make everyone a lot more money. And the more money we all make, the more money they can claim in tax revenue. So that tax revenue funds all of our bits of society that we love. We want a police force. You know, we want electricity. We want roads. We want healthcare. We want education. We want all of these things that gets paid by taxes. And we have more tax when we have a highly paid workforce. We have a highly paid workforce when we have a highly educated workforce. That is why a politician, a government, invests in education. So that's the purpose. That's the why of school. That's the why. If we now take a step back and we ask the question, all right, well, why AI? Well, if the purpose of school is to best prepare our students for workforce so that they can operate in highly paid jobs and earn as much money as possible, then surely we are all well aware. No one here is naive enough to think that AI is going to blow away in the next wind. Like, AI is entrenched in our society. It is going to be further entrenched as we go along year to year, and it is going to be an inescapable part of every single job for the future. Every single career path is going to have some form of AI integrated into it. The people who are able to wield and utilize AI super effectively are the people who are going to enter into those highly paid jobs. So if the purpose of schools is to create this highly educated population that can enter this highly high-paid, career path, then obviously having them well prepared for AI helps achieve that overall goal of what the purpose of school, from the people who pay the bill, what the purpose of school actually is. And I think when you come at it from that lens, the why of AI suddenly becomes a lot more clearer.
As you were talking, I kind of thought of this metaphor of a car. You know, it seems like government funding is probably the petroleum, or as some people around the world would say, the gas, the petrol. But it feels to me that, you know, the drivers of this process are our teachers. What sort of unique skills and qualities do teachers bring to the educational process and the purpose of education?
I think we're all familiar with a dude called Steve Jobs. I think we've all heard of that name, right? The absolute best explanation I've ever heard for why we should have AI, or why we should utilize AI to its maximum potential, is from a 1981 Steve Jobs interview. He talks about this scientist, and I can't remember the university, but the scientists who did this research of efficiency of different animals, and particularly different mammals and around the world. And, they measured humans running and how fast, you know, humans could run and the movement of humans. And, it turns out, we can, X score on this efficiency matrix that they made. And then, no surprise, the most efficient animal in the world was the cheetah. The cheetah could move at a space that was, so fast and so lean and very, very efficient use of energy and body mass and all that sort of stuff. And it was an incredibly efficient mechanism that cheetah could, because of that, could go so fast. And it's easy to go, well, humans, so hopeless compared to all the other animals, But then some scientists had a masterstroke and thought, why don't we measure humans on a bicycle? And the same human on the bike and measured the efficiency, and the human was like five times more efficient on a bicycle than the cheetah. So the human application of technology can allow us to do things at an incredibly efficient rate and an incredibly powerful rate. And we would be basically mad not to actually utilize the best tool that we have, which is our brain, to craft these fantastical contraptions to allow us to do things that we previously could not do without them. Who wants to get in a running race with a cheetah without a bike to jump on? Not going to win. We know that. So if we're trying to prepare our kids for the workforce, do you want to be the kid? Do you want to prepare the students who are barefoot running, or do you want to prepare the students on the bicycle, or maybe you even want to prepare the kids on the motorbike? Who are we trying to prepare for their future? And I guess that's an interesting perspective as well. Just to go, do you know what? Maybe there's something to not only preparing them so that they can work, but maybe preparing them so that they can do it to the maximum of their potential. And I think there's some power and validity to that comment.
So, I mean, essentially then, you know, as teachers, it's almost like we need to be thinking or have that mindset to be ahead of the curve, to not ignore the trends in the world, but to think about how to harness those and prepare the kids who are in our classrooms to harness the power of these developments, whether it be in technology or in other spaces.
I think, yeah, look, there's lots of ways there. Like, I think one of the things sometimes we lack in education, if you said to a teacher, we just asked the question, what's the purpose of school? Any principal or school leader, I'd love you to try this activity with your staff one day. Put up on the whiteboard what is the role of the teacher, and put out some pens and see what happens. Within 5 minutes or 10 minutes, that whiteboard's going to be full of 1,000 different things, from from first aid to mental health. There's huge explosion of all the different roles of what a teacher does, and I think sometimes we lack precise clarity of what our purpose as an educator is, and I think if we were able to go, well, do you know what, we need to help this child be more efficient, we need to very clearly do critical thinking, adaptive, creative, all this sort of stuff, and if we work towards those goals, then we're able, I guess the technology almost becomes irrelevant. Because we're working to the skill, not necessarily the tech, because the tech is going to change, and the tech is changing faster than ever. So I don't think there's the pressure to go, well, let's grab Microsoft Copilot, or let's jump onto Google Gemini, or let's make ChatGPT, custom things as fast as possible, because that technology is going to be gone 6 months' time, 12 months' time. You invest 6 months building something, next school year, that thing's going to be so redundant, you don't even want to touch it. Dr. Matthew Joseph, who is a friend of mine over in the US, he has an interesting thing that he looks at. Like, he goes, on our save button, when we're doing a Word document, we've got that little disc, that 3-inch floppy disk that's to save there. We all know what that is, but that technology's evolved, and kids don't even know what that is. And it can seem scary to us to have the technology change, and the AI can seem intimidating. AI can seem intimidating, but because it opens up huge possibilities of what on earth can I do with this? But what he says is, do you know what? The AI that we have today is the junk that the kid, it's the worst AI that our children, our students are ever going to experience. This is the first edition version of everything. Could you imagine? Can we think back to the, not only 3.5-inch floppies to 5-inch floppies and all that technology has been wildly superseded? That is how the students of today will view the AI that we're trying to grapple with. Whilst it's hugely transformative for us, it is the 3.5 or 5-inch floppy disk to them. It will be superseded, and they won't even think twice about the AI that we're trying to use today or tomorrow, because their AI in 5 years or 10 years' time is just going to blow what we're doing out of the water. So keeping up with the specific tool or product or whatever the latest trend is, irrelevant. What we need to do is hone in on the quality teaching, on those humanistic qualities, on what it is to be a good teacher. And then we leverage that AI, we leverage that technology to enhance really, really good traditional pedagogical practices.
I love how you framed that. And I want to get, you know, later at the end of this conversation, I want to speak a little bit more about rehumanizing education in this age, because I think that is such an important part of it. But I want to dig a little bit deeper into this sort of connection between AI and education's purpose that we've been speaking about and the role of teachers. And you know, I'm wondering if you could share some kind of more specific insights in the ways in which AI can support or even transform the achievement of these educational goals. You know, you've touched on some of those things, but is there a way to illustrate it and make it more tangible for people?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I think I want to call out, there's a professor here called Toby Walsh who works for the University of New South Wales, who's quite a very globally renowned AI expert. I had a conversation with him not so long ago on my podcast, and he used the phrase, he called back to his old teacher, Mr. Black, and he said, Mr. Black, his mathematics teacher, is the one who changed his whole outset on life, changed his whole outset on mathematics, changed his whole outset on belief in self, what can be accomplished. And you know what? I don't care how high tech the AI gets. And this is what I'm paraphrasing for him now. AI can't replace that. AI can't replace Mr. Black. No AI is going to be Mr. Black. I've just finished reading. I don't know if you've come across. It'll be interesting read for a lot of your listeners. Sal Khan's Brave New Words. And he talks about how AI will save education, which I find quite a confronting phrase. A very, very difficult pill to swallow, because I think, you know, education's, you know, we don't always get things right in education, but we've done a pretty darn good job for the last few millennia of teaching future generations. But certainly ways that we can do things well. And Carmigo is one of those. I don't know if you've come across Carmigo, Bruce, or if some of your listeners have. But Carmigo is an interesting one because it got first early access to GPT-4, the large language model, the LLM, large language model. And what they've been able to do there is sort of train a tutor to be able to have an on-tap support sitting right next to the student. So as a teacher, I might be teaching linear equations. I've got 30 children in my class. I can set the linear equations work with all of my students, and then each child can actually work on this, and Carmigo can actually give them real-time feedback, real-time instruction, and really be at their differentiated point of need. And it's that sort of work where we know that in teaching, we know good practices to differentiate for the students in our care, but we also know how tremendously hard and difficult that is. So being able to, in real time, differentiate. We know feedback one of the very strongest things that we can do to improve learning. AI can potentially give instantaneous real-time feedback to students. Who doesn't want that? We already know that feedback is really, really good pedagogical practice. We know that feedback can drive and improve learning outcomes and long-term learning. Why wouldn't we want to put AI to expedient, get faster that the whole feedback loop? So there are ways that we could use. There's a Sydney University here has a large language model concept called Cogniti, where teachers can add a little agents and make basically like custom GPTs that are a little bit more of a secure environment, an education-based environment where you can make custom GPTs. In fact, I've just made one. I'm working with some principals at the Opera House, of all places, the Sydney Opera House, on Friday this week. And I've made a custom I've used Cogniti and GPT as well, actually. And I've made a custom GPT, a custom agent, to generate policy documents. To be able to, you put in your information and you can make school policy documents. Again, lightening the load of people. So there's a tremendous amount of administrative burden that can be lightened because of all of that, what AI is making possible. So from an administrative point, from a teaching point, from a student feedback point, from an assessment point, there's a tremendous amount of things that we're able to utilize that can improve the teaching and learning and the whole experience within a school.
I get the sense, though, I mean, actually we're saying don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, this does not mean that we throw out all the great pedagogy and the things we know about good teaching, but we use that foundation to make good decisions about how to integrate AI into our practice.
I think that's the secret, right? Like I don't think education works when you dehumanize it. You pick your average 15 or 16 year old full of testosterone boy who's just come off the soccer pitch or just come off the rugby field, having a kick around with his mates at lunchtime. There's been a little bit of that, you know, typical teenage boy bravado coming into maths class. We're sitting down. Are they going to do logarithmics and linear equations? Linear equations on my brain at the moment. Are they going to do that because the computer screen text tells them that they're doing that? Or are they going to do that because Sir in the corner or Miss over there has taken the time and built that relationship and has that relational connection between teacher and student? Of course, it's the human in the room that is actually going to make all of that happen. It's that relational bond. It's that pedagogy that they've done it. They've sat down. They've worked them through it. You've explained it. The teacher has to enable that connection, that first kickoff, set the tone of the lesson, get it ready, explain it, and off we go. And then it's the teacher that does the wrap up. And now this is important because this is going to happen, or this is important because, you know, your dream of becoming a plumber or a builder or an architect or a politician, this is important that we do all this sort of stuff. So I think there's contextualization that only a human can do.
You know, we often speak of empathy as a critical skill for success in life. And, you know, I think there's a lot of talk about AI hindering the development of empathy in boys.
Yeah. You know, you've just stood on a massive landmine that is a huge, I don't know, I don't know if my gasp, I don't know if that picked up on the audio, the people listening, you know, I don't know if they heard that, but certainly if there was video, my face would have told because, So I think there's a tremendous amount of risk here too. We have to move forward, but we have to move forward cautiously. We know student data, privacy, we need to have these conversations, legislation around what's appropriate, you know, just even good practice on making sure we can't offload the thinking. The human brain still needs to do the hard work. We know that rigor and that challenge needs to be there for developmental growth. So we can't offload all of that. There's a whole bunch of risks that need to be addressed. But that empathy thing, and it might be the primary school teacher here in me coming out, but one of the things that spooks me, and if you bear with me for a little narrative here, and I apologize, but there has been a 9,000% increase, 9,000% increase in children's literature that is available on Amazon for sale since the dawn of ChatGPT. Why is that an issue? As a human species, we know that for survival, we have to be very self-centered. We are egocentric, you know, like Freud talks about the ego, right? Like, a baby needs to cry when it needs mother's milk, otherwise it will starve. A baby needs to cry when it is cold, otherwise it'll have damage with exposure. We are in the early years of our human development, very, very self-centered for survival. We have to be. Developmentally, you know, we're not like a giraffe that can be born and then be running along the plains of Africa 15 minutes later, fully formed, you know, ready to go. We take extra time to continue to grow and to continue to develop after we're born. That's you know, part of the trouble that comes with having a big brain. But we know that humans evolve or transition from this really egocentric part to having societal links and empathy for others through story. Now, often in Western society, that story happens with picture books, children's picture books. We hear about other perspectives for the first time through children's literature, through picture books. Now, this is the scary part. With this 9,000% increase in books that are clearly being generated by AI, AI can't have the empathy that an author has because it's a bot. It lacks empathy. It can mimic a story. It can have sentence structure. It can have a beginning, middle, and end. But there is something very, very special, in particularly in children's books, particularly in our youth, when you have an author that crafts words that have a special meaning. Right at first, those words are just words. They mean nothing. You've just written a lot of words on some paper. But when a reader gathers meaning, there's a special bond that occurs between author and reader. That's a magical moment. That's what literature is all about. If we are farming that out to a bot who mimics storytelling, who has no heart, who has no soul, who has no empathy, but is just doing a beginning, middle, and end, throwing out some words, generate a couple of AI-generated images, pump it out there, and there's a nice book generated by AI. I think there is a real risk there that we are robbing our younger generation of a developmental phase of growing their empathy. I think there's a real risk. And I think if we look back at whether you are pro-mobile phone or anti-mobile phone, I think we all can agree that social media has not been fantastic for the mental health and well-being of teenagers around the world. So if we could go back 15 years and with the first tweet that was being sent, if we went, hey, you know what? Let's put some regulations around this. Let's put some guardrails on here, what we can and can't do, because it might be what's best for society. It might be what's best for kids. I reckon we'd all take that opportunity to do it if we could. I am frightened of the risk that we haven't put up a lot of our protection around these developmental things, like developing empathy for the younger boys and girls that are in our care.
You know, Brett, you talk from a primary school teacher's perspective. I think I shared with you last time, before joining IBSC, I taught English in a high school context. And often the novels I would choose for boys to study were specifically focused on building their empathy and their understanding of the other. And I can see, you know, maybe it's children's books today. Maybe tomorrow it's a 9,000% increase in novels that are available that are written by bots. And I think it'll have the same impact throughout our conversation. I've sensed from you that the technology is there. If we leverage it in the right ways, if we, you know, implement good pedagogy, you know, we're going to be able to use AI effectively and prepare boys to use AI effectively in the long term. But how do we keep humanity in education? Does AI provide an opportunity for us to rehumanize education, to bring things back to what matters?
Look, I think it does. And I think I kind of hinted at this. I may have jumped the gun a little bit a couple of minutes ago. But that concept of maybe the AI is this mechanism that does a lot of the grunt work for us. Maybe it can do a lot of our administration. Maybe it can do a lot of that real-time, instantaneous feedback, and we become more that traditional mentor. We focus in on that relationship. Maybe, this is what I really hope. I think there is a strange juxtaposition where, like Sal Khan will talk about saving education with AI. I think he's wrong, but he might be accidentally right, because I think it might... AI might save us by us actually leaning more into our humanity. We know, like in assessment, and this is one of the things I'd love to talk to you in further. I think AI and assessment is going to be one of the huge transformative challenges that we're going to have to come over. But let's be honest, we've known for quite some times what really good quality pedagogical approach to assessment is. We know, like the top of that Bloom's taxonomy pyramid, like we need to be doing creative, evaluative thinking. We need children really, really at that top end of that Bloom's taxonomy. But quite often, because it's what we've always done and we need a mark or a grade, maybe we do a test or maybe we do an essay. AI is very, very good at doing basic recall of fact. So maybe what it does is give us a really, really strong kick in the backside to go, maybe all those practices that we should be evolving out of might be better done if we actually start doing some higher order thinking and actually challenge the internal person of the students in our care. So we've got that aspect of it. But I really do think if AI is doing a lot of the grunt work in the classroom, if it's doing some of that administrative work, if it's doing some of the grunt work like a Khan-Migo type of scenario, that gives us time then to sit down and, Mr. Collins comes over and sits down next to old Brett who's struggling with his Shakespeare, and you sit down and you tell me a little bit more about Fair Verona, where we laid our scene. You know, you explain a little bit more of the context for me in a way that a computer can't. And I think that's where the real power is. So we might be able to save education, but not in the way you think. I think it's not that AI is going to replace teachers' jobs. I think AI is going to support teachers, and teachers are going to be able to be more humanistic and build those relational connections with the students, and particularly the boys in our care. And as you said, the research is in, and it's been in for a long, long time. You build better relational connections with the students in your care, you're going to get better results in the end.
Well, Brett, thank you for helping us dip our toe into this conversation, and there'll certainly be more. Really appreciate you being on Exploring Boys Education.
I'm sure you'll agree with me that Brett's insights into the evolving landscape of education have been both enlightening and thought-provoking. As we navigate the complexities of AI integration, it's clear that the human touch in education remains irreplaceable. Teachers, with their empathy, passion, and ability to inspire, are the cornerstone of a fulfilling educational experience for boys. So while AI offers powerful tools for personalization and support, it's the human connection that truly ignites a lifelong love of learning. Thank you for joining us for this final episode of Season 5. And until Season 6 of Exploring Boys Education launches in late August, keep on championing boys' education.